Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City, and I'd like to welcome you. You can watch today's program by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook. Today, we're going to talk about tickle therapy could help slow the aging process. Yeah, University of Leeds. I'll get into that in detail. And a lot of other healthy studies coming your way today, as we do every day. Then we're going to look at some issues involving the environment. I'm going to give you some of the headlines from around the world and why we should pay attention immediately. We don't have 12 years. We don't have 5 years. According to the people that I interview and that I cooperate with, we have a year and a half before things get so far out of control that, well, the Amazon cannot be rebalanced. It'll tip. And we're expecting huge increases in carbon dioxide. And there's a group of individuals, some of the wealthiest people in the world, who are taking private jets to a foreign country and a luxurious resort, including Katy Perry, Oprah Winfrey, and others, to talk about climate change, global warming. Now think of that for a moment. They're taking private jets. They all have mega mansions, multiple mansions. They're the massive consumers. Everything in their life causes the problem that they, as non-experts, are supposed to guide us to. What a stupid idea. And how vulgar is it for someone who has no expertise, no value to contribute to an issue, suddenly they're taking the lead. Why? Because it's a photo op and these megalomaniac and narcissistic people can't stand not to be the center of attention? Well, that's what you're faced with. You think Oprah's going to save you from anything? Has she ever saved anyone? Think again. I'm going to take this on in a commentary today. Also, I'm going to deal with the second part of my trying to understand what is going on in America that we would waste 3 years on a completely fraudulent investigation of the president by the Democrats and all of the Democratic-controlled media for nothing. Why? Well, they had hoped that it would keep the Clinton camp and all of their retainers in power. What do I mean by that? I mean that since they came to Washington out of Arkansas with a sordid reputation in Arkansas, and that's not hearsay, I did my own personal investigation way back then on the Clintons. They have kept as many people in power, heading agencies, or being leading policymakers and opinion leaders in Washington, probably in the neighborhood of 10,000 people all told. And then Obama comes in and uses many of the same people that Clinton had. And then Bush comes in, and some of the people that Bush and Reagan used, Trump is using, but they're all a part of this one Washington consensus. They are all benefiting from crisis, from fear, the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical complex, the banking complex, the agricultural complex, the educational complex. Everybody has something to benefit as long as no one comes along that disrupts that. And Trump, as vulgar, as mean-spirited, as petulant, as narcissistic as he is, they didn't know what to expect. They knew they couldn't control him. Clinton, she's a pay-to-play person, as is Bill. Trump, they had to stop, and that's why you had the Mueller investigation. Dislike him, vote him out, but at the same time, don't waste 3 years of doing things that could actually benefit American cities. But they did, and that was a mistake. A long time ago, I said, don't put your energy in attacking Trump. Put your energy in making it a better country, and then he won't get elected again. They didn't learn that lesson. But who was behind it? how did they get away with it up to this point? My sources in Washington tell me that you can reasonably expect in the next 4 weeks indictments, grand juries to hand down the word that certain people top of the food chain at the Justice Department and the FBI are going to be indicted. That happens. You'll probably see Clinton and her immediate staff also under the gun and brought in. Long overdue for that to occur. Anyhow, we're going to deal with that. And also today, I'm going to introduce two short clips. One's with Deepak Chopra debating Richard Dawkins, the famous British author and atheist. It's an interesting discussion, and it shows you why, in this case, Deepak is correct. But then again, we have another clip, and we have a clip of one of the most interesting human beings you've ever heard or not heard of. And we're going to have Richard Gall come in and give a little bio on these, because these are the people who believe that the mind is important in healing, that your thoughts can have power to change your DNA. Now, the science actually backs them, but those people calling themselves the new face of scientific-based medicine, the skeptics, they're atheists. They don't believe in any of this. They denigrate it. They attack as lunatic charlatans anyone who espouses anything holistic. They're against chiropractic. They're against alternative medicine in all forms. They believe none of this. They only believe in a pharmaceutical or orthodox medical approach, and they won't look at all the limitations and contradictions of that failure. So we thought you would like to hear two of the people talking about the power of your mind to people who don't believe that there is a mind, there's just a brain. And they're only looking at the molecules through neuroscience of the brain. They don't believe there's a spirit. They don't believe there's intuition. They don't believe there is an ability to exchange ideas without speaking. They don't believe in harmonizing. None of the things that I have seen in my own life really work do they believe in. So we're going to have that today, because we defended Deepak. We're also defending Rupert Sheldrake in an upcoming editorial. And the people have been attacked by the critics in Wikipedia, we're defending on this show. That said, let's begin with tickle therapy. Now, what is tickle therapy? Tickle therapy is tickling the ear with a small electrical current, and it appears to rebalance the autonomic nervous system, especially for people over the age of 55, potentially slowing down one of the effects of aging. That's according to new research, and scientists found that a short daily therapy delivered for 2 weeks led to both physiological and well-being improvements, including better quality of life, better mood, better sleep. The therapy is called cutaneous vagus nerve stimulation. It delivers just a very small, painless electrical current to the ear, which sends signals to the body's nervous system through the vagus nerve. That's good. Also from National Taiwan University, antioxidant compounds found in soybeans, we're talking about not GMO soybeans, can prevent marijuana-induced blood vessel damage. That's important. And by the way, there are thousands of studies showing that there are benefits to the oils that are in marijuana. However, there are a lot of problems that can occur to the body by smoking marijuana. And because two of my very closest friends used a lot of marijuana, both ended up psychotic, paranoid, delusional, and incapable of working. And their families literally, for 40 years, had to take care of them. So working at the Institute of Applied Biology, I created a protocol to help detoxify the brain of the chemical imbalances that occurred from smoking marijuana. I'll be doing a program on that. It'll be a whole hour on Progressive Commentary Hour of how to detoxify from smoking marijuana. Right now, I'm also looking at a way of helping the lungs rejuvenate from what are called popcorn lungs, from people who use the inhalers, which are extremely dangerous. People think, well, I gave up cigarettes, but now I'm using this mint-flavored or cherry-flavored, thing that I smoke. These vaporizers, no, you're doing a lot of damage to your lungs. So we'll try to help people detoxify. Also, in this study, compounds found in soybeans block damage to the lining of blood vessels in the heart and circulatory system, and that could help prevent cardiovascular side effects of recreational medical marijuana use. And that was presented at the American Heart Association Basic Cardiovascular Science Convention recently. So that's important, because a lot of people could end up with a heart attack or stroke from smoking marijuana. Also, a study at the University of Paris, high dietary total antioxidants capacity is associated with reduced risk of hypertension in women, meaning that there's a lot of evidence that a plant-based diet reduces the risk of hypertension just by consuming more fruits and vegetables. And the relationship between the total antioxidant capacity and total antioxidant capacity, or TAC, and the risk of hypertension has not been previously examined. So they examined this, and they found it's this simple. The more fruits and vegetables that you consume, the less hypertension or high blood pressure. Also, the less body mass index, meaning your fat, and you have more energy, you have more physical activity. So those are all important. And from a look at the changes in biomarker concentrations in women, a Harvard University School of Public Health found that change in a plant-based diet quality is associated with changes in the plasma adipose-associated biomarker concentration in women. Now, in lay language, what this means is that a healthy plant-based diet is associated with lower risk of cardiometabolic diseases. That's diabetes, that's high blood pressure, that's heart attacks. And so the more fruits and vegetables, the more grains and nuts and seeds, and that's important, you're going to live a longer life. And there are just so many hundreds of studies on showing this. Also from the Nanjing Medical University in China, another research project on soy, this one on soy isoflavone. It improved female sexual dysfunction, especially with the increase in endothelial nitric oxide synthesis pathways. Sounds a little complicated, but it's not. It works the same way in men. One of the ways when a man comes to me for counseling and he has erectile dysfunction, which is epidemic in our society, it's just men don't talk about it. They're embarrassed. And for years they took the different over-the-counter prescription medications, but there are side effects to that. Well, serious side effects. You could have a heart attack from using it. But what does that tablet do? It simply increases the amount of nitric oxide. That increases the ability of blood to get through the vessels and engorge. The engorgement of those vessels is what causes an erection. But beyond the age, let's say, of about 30, those blood vessels begin to rupture, collapse. They also begin to have deterioration. If you sit on a bike, that's a big problem for men without them realizing it, because some of the veins that feed directly into their sexual organs are right in that area between the scrotum and the anus, and they don't realize that. So now, by taking beet juice and walnuts or walnut butter, that's a great source of arginine, and choline, you're sending a signal from the brain to reproductive system, and then you're allowing a greater flow of blood. And by the way, I've had so much positive feedback from people saying it worked. But here's something else. This is something relatively new. And it works this way. there are ways of having your own blood, and not a lot, about 30 cc's, taken out, and they spin it down, take off the plasma, and then they inject that in six different areas. And then that causes, because there's stem cells in there, that causes rejuvenation of new veins. They also have this apparatus, and I'm not even sure what it's called, but they have about, I think it's 1,400 to 2,400 thumping vibrations. And what it does, they take a clear round over your reproductive system, and that is also causing a breakdown of the old tissue, the body's ability to remove it and repair and rebuild, in effect, to grow new veins. Because the only difference between an erection that's full and an erection that's partial, and men will tell you that what they had in an erection when they were younger is not the same as they have older, it's because of the veins. So this is something really revolutionary. And it hasn't caught on yet. It will, and it has the same impact on women, increasing the sensitivity, because they frequently can become, in postmenopausal situations, desensitized in the reproductive system. It really resensitizes them. They're using their own DNA, their own plasma. There's no side effects. And that's very good. That's for millions and millions of men and women, especially those who are having problems with sexual dysfunction. In any case, according to this report from Nanjing, People's Republic of China, an article on the female sexual dysfunction, and by the way, it's common as an endocrine disease that impairs the quality of life for many women. And the existing therapy strategies still have many disadvantages and with serious side effects. But in this case, they found that the soybean and the soy isoflavones made a big difference. So that's good. From Texas A&M University comes a study that mangoes, just eating mangoes, and by the way, there are over 1,500 types of mangoes, has a positive impact on inflammatory bowel disease. I found it good for people with ulcers and with diverticulitis. Has a very soft fiber, but has a lot of healing polyphenols. And this study was done in the Department of Nutrition and Food Sciences, Texas A&M. And just eat more mangoes and turn off inflammatory bowel disease. How about that? It's that simple. It's not complicated. It becomes complicated when they want to take the active ingredient and add it into a drug that is normally used to treat Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. You don't need the drug. Just the mango and probiotics will do the job. And finally, from a randomized trial at the University of Hohenheim in Germany, energy drinks induce acute cardiovascular and metabolic changes, pointing to potential risks for young adults having heart attacks and strokes, including death from these energy drinks. And it was a very complex study, but it was a randomized crossover trial of young people and taking these energy drinks. They had all kinds of problems. Blood pressure spiked, heart rhythm changed, and all kinds of electrocardio problems. So just be warned that these energy drinks can be deadly. But you can certainly take things if you want energy, if you want to stimulate natural energy without caffeine. And glutamine is one of the best things you can use. Trimethylglycine is also good. Taurine is good. Coenzyme Q10. So you can get your energy without killing yourself. Finally, one last one from the University of Lodz in Poland. Vitamin D reduces both oxidative DNA damage and insulin resistance in people who are older with metabolic disorder. And we have millions of Americans who have pre- and diabetic conditions, so take your vitamin D each day. It'll make a difference. We're almost 20 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Knoll, and we're going to take a break. One last thing from Northwestern University. green tea ingredients can ameliorate memory impairment and brain insulin resistance. So you want to help your brain? Green tea. It can make a difference. The EGCG component of green tea is very good. And stop using artificial light from digital devices around your bedtime, because that light, according to the University of Houston, will keep you awake and reduce the quality of your sleep. How many times people not unplug their computer, turn it completely off, and turn off all the smart watches and the smartphones and the tablets, disconnect them, but they don't. And that allows that light to come out. And that light, even though your eyes are closed, that light will penetrate and cause reduction in melatonin. That's the latest on health and healing. 20 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. By the way, the final New York appearance and of the my latest film, it's the latest finished film. I have a film on the environment that we're all excited that it's finally, after 7 years of producing it, and you'll see it filmed all over the world. It'll be announced where it's going to be premiered, probably in October. In any case, I will be up in Woodstock, wonderful town, lots of very hip people, laid back, and if you've never been to Woodstock, it's fun. So for all of you living in Poughkeepsie and Newburgh and New Paltz, and come over Saturday. Come over at 1:30 to the Tinker Theater at 132 Tinker, T-I-N-K-E-R Street. And we'll be having a showing of the film and a discussion afterwards. I always go up there because there's some nice people up there at WIOF FM 104.1 on the radio. And Felicia, who runs that, has us on every day. We appreciate it. And so it's a way for me to show my appreciation for the stations around the United States. I help them go out and raise money, and I'll be doing the same up there, plus premiering this film. Now, a lot of people are concerned about ticks, rightly so, and Lyme's disease, and how did this all evolve? I'm going to play you a five-minute clip on what happened at Plum Island. This is an interesting short clip, but we are doing a larger article exposing the history of biological warfare. Also, this Friday, I'm going to be sharing with you two articles that I wrote back in the 1980s that broke open this whole story in a national cover story on the government doing human experimentation on the most vulnerable of Americans. They were doing it in poor hospitals. They were doing it on African Americans, on prisoners, on people in the military. And they lied to them. There was no informed consent. So I exposed it twice, two different articles. Both of those articles I'm going to share with you this Friday. But this is just showing you how nefarious the government is, how they lie as a matter of standard practice. You just can't trust unless you verify anything the government says. But that's also true for the media and major institutions as well. So here's a short piece about Lyme's disease and why it could have been weaponized. And there's going to be a congressional hearing And, of course, the government will come forward, its agencies, and lie about it, as it's done historically, that it's not doing experiments, and it was. It's not creating biological weapons. It did. It said, in fact, I broke the story in one of my articles on, I found the actual way that the government was sending weapons of mass destruction, including biological agents, to Saddam Hussein when he was still our ally. And he was then compounding it and using it against the Kurds and against the Iranians. Now, later, when he would be captured and he was actually tried on gassing the Kurds, at no point in that testimony did America's cooperation come up, that we're the ones who supplied those ingredients. But we did. And how we got it through the Department of Agriculture to get it into the country and bypass all inspections. Anyhow, this is about Lyme's disease.
Plum Island.
Lyme disease is one of those illnesses that unless you have it or you know someone who's afflicted by it, most people don't even know that much about it, other than that it's caused by a tick bite. It's been referred to as the Great Imitator because it mirrors many other awful medical disorders, including chronic fatigue syndrome, lupus, multiple sclerosis, arthritis, fibromyalgia, and Alzheimer's disease, just to name a few. Initially, Lyme disease causes a barrage of painful symptoms, including tiredness unrelieved by sleeping or resting, insomnia, abdominal pain, nausea, confusion, mood swings, joint pain, recurrent headaches, fever, chills, dizziness, difficulty concentrating, and even impaired short-term memory.
All along the sides of this road are some very thick woods and thick brush, and I'm just thinking how much we want to stay in the center of this path. Because I'm about sick and tired of weaponized ticks.
But ultimately, it can harm organs and systems throughout the body, including the heart, the circulatory, digestive, and reproductive systems, and the brain and nervous system. Despite the fact that many people don't know that much about it, Lyme disease is becoming pretty common these days. According to the CDC, Lyme was the sixth most common nationally notifiable disease in 2015 and the most commonly reported vector-borne illness in the United States, thought to affect some 300,000 people a year in this country.
I'm from Missouri. We have a lot of ticks in Missouri, and I grew up in the woods, but it's not anything like you see here. The ticks are rampant.
Strangely, though, when people attempt to get medical attention for Lyme disease, a lot of times they're told that Lyme disease is really rare and that they probably have something else. Many times a person is forced to go through exhaustive medical testing for all kinds of other ailments and ruling all of those out before a doctor will even consider administering a test for Lyme disease. But I'll get to that later.
You could walk in there for 2 seconds, step back out here, you'll be covered in ticks. Tiny little ones that are so small you basically need to go over your body for 3 hours with a high-powered flashlight just to even find the things to get them off of yourself. It's a nightmare.
There may be a good reason why doctors are hesitant to test their patients for Lyme, even when those patients are fully willing to pay out-of-pocket for the testing for it, and despite the fact that for some reason in this era of modern medical technology, the test for Lyme is still woefully inaccurate. For the longest time, the government has been implicated in and repeatedly denied any ties to the creation and proliferation of Lyme disease in this country, despite some pretty compelling evidence to the contrary. Lyme disease was not officially recognized or discovered until the mid-70s when there was an outbreak of what doctors originally mistook for juvenile rheumatoid arthritis in several southeastern Connecticut towns, including Lyme and Old Lyme, which is how the disease got its name. A cursory newspaper archive search revealed that the bacteria that causes Lyme, Borrelia burgdorferi, wasn't mentioned in print in newspapers until the year 1984, although Google newspapers came back with nothing at all. If you look at these towns on a map, you'll notice they are right directly across the Long Island Sound from Plum Island, which has been a government animal disease research facility since the mid-50s and doubled as a military biological warfare research facility, although the government denied it for decades. It's less than 9 miles from shore to shore, the way the crow flies.
Well, we're looking generally at the coast of Connecticut, where Old Lyme is located, just a short distance, really, across the Sound.
You'll also notice, if you look again at those maps I showed earlier, the outbreak and concentration of Lyme disease in this country centers around that place. The CDC admits that 95% of cases of Lyme come from just 14 states, the majority of which are located around Plum Island. Plum Island's biowarfare history dates back to World War II and Operation Paperclip, a top-secret government program to shield Nazi scientists from trial or punishment by quietly bringing them over to the U.S. and giving them new identities and U.S. citizenship in exchange for working for the government and military. One such Nazi scientist was Dr. Erich Traube, lab chief during World War II for Nazi Germany's Insel Reims, a secret biological warfare laboratory on an island in the Baltic Sea where Traube worked directly under Hitler's number two, Heinrich Himmler. Traube's job included spraying viruses from planes over occupied Russia. Prior to the war, just by the way, Traube had been involved in Nazi activities in the U.S. at Camp Siegfried on Long Island, just 30 miles from where Plum Island would eventually be located, while he was here on a fellowship studying viruses and bacteria at, of all places, the Rockefeller Institute. Plum Island was specifically named for Cold War biowarfare research alongside Dugway Proving Ground and Fort Detrick back in the early 50s, when the U.S. biowarfare program and clandestine germ warfare trials first began. Erich Traube completed his Operation Paperclip duties working for the American Biological Warfare Program from 1949 to 1953, during which time he consulted with the CIA and scientists at Fort Detrick before returning to West Germany in 1953 to run the country's own Insel Reims-like experimental virus facility in Tübingen with the U.S. government's permission. Not only did USDA officials visit Traube's lab over there, but Traube also briefly worked for the USDA, which oversaw Plum Island, and throughout the 50s he was in regular contact with Plum Island's director, Doc Shahan. He was also at the Plum Island dedication ceremony in 1956, and visited the place at least twice after that in 57 and 58 when Plum Island's lead scientist, Dr. Jacob Traube, retired, and the USDA considered replacing him with who else? Dr. Erich Traube. Seems like they got the location idea for Plum Island from Insel Reims. Can't imagine who gave it to him. In the 1970s, attorney John Loftus was hired by the Office of Special Investigations, a unit set up by the Justice Department to look into Nazi war crimes. He was given a top-secret clearance and allowed access to decades' worth of classified documents. Loftus turned up records of Nazi germ warfare scientists who came into the U.S. and experimented with dropping poison ticks from planes to spread rare diseases. He also specifically mentioned in his book, The Belarus Secret, that he received information that suggested the U.S. tested some of these poison ticks on the Plum Island artillery range during the early 1950s when it was called Fort Terry. This story was further validated by attorney Michael Carroll in his book Lab 257. Carroll claims that not only did a source who worked at Plum Island in the 50s tell him that some of the workers purposefully released ticks outdoors on the island in 1951, and that they all referred to one of the scientists involved as, quote, the Nazi scientist, but Carroll says he dug up a box of 1950s USDA files from the National Archives vault that included three folders, two labeled Tick Research and one labeled E. Traube. All three were empty. Even more damning, in an article in the Journal of Degenerative Diseases, Marjorie Tetchin reported that 60% of chronic Lyme patients are actually co-infected with several strains of mycoplasma, the most common one being Mycoplasma fermentans, which just so happens to be patented by the U.S. Army and Army pathologist Dr. Lowe. Today, the official story touted by government scientists is that the scientific evidence does not support Lyme disease originating on Plum Island. This is despite the fact that researchers at Plum Island were experimenting with hundreds of thousands of hard and soft ticks on Plum Island, where classified top-secret biowarfare research was being carried out by the U.S. military for decades, and that the first outbreak of Lyme happened right directly across the sound from Plum Island, where thousands upon thousands of birds fly, and despite the fact that they've been forced to admit culpability in the outbreak of other types of viruses on the island due to the unsecured nature of these experiments, especially in the early decades. Experimental animals for which being kept outside in open-air pens up through the late 70s, when a highly contagious foot-and-mouth disease outbreak on Plum Island in 1978 ended in the government being forced to put over 200 of its own animals to death. The U.S. government continues to pretend like it couldn't possibly have had a hand in Lyme disease. Then again, the U.S. government has repeatedly denied that there was even any biowarfare experimentation going on Plum Island for decades, up until documents proving otherwise were published by Newsday in 1993. Meanwhile, Canada has been complaining in recent years of Lyme disease proliferating there due to migratory birds picking up black-legged ticks when they fly south into the U.S. for the winter and come back up there with them.
That's just part of the short documentary. This person did a very good job on detailing it. So what we know now that we can actually establish is that the government was experimenting on weaponizing ticks. And at the time when they were weaponizing ticks and never before, and right across the sound in Lyme, Connecticut, they had the first outbreaks of Lyme's disease, and now it's 300,000-plus Americans being infected each year, and ticks are everywhere. In fact, when I went to the beach with some friends, and I took a sheet, and they said, what's the sheet for? I said, well, I don't want sand fleas, but also I don't want ticks. They said, well, you're not going to get any ticks here. I said, yeah, you will. So I put the sheet out, and they're all running around having a good time. And within 1 hour, four ticks were on the sheet, because I felt a white sheet. You know, you see a dark tick, black or brown, you can tell. So I said, well, there you are. I said, so what if I hadn't brought this? That means those four ticks have been on me. And it's just people can be very cavalier by what they don't know. So once again, the United States government is not going to say, oh, yeah, we weaponized ticks, and for all of you millions of Americans who have Lyme disease, we're responsible. We should compensate. They've never acknowledged until it's way after the fact, until the Tuskegee experiment, and Bill Clinton had to apologize for that. Then all the open-air experiments with biological weapons, actual biological weapons, and then Bill Clinton had to apologize for that. And right now we have 5G, and we have genetically modified foods, and no one's apologizing for that. We're only going to play you one clip right today, Deepak Chopra. And Richard Gale, our producer's in the studio, and I want him to explain why this debate between Dawkins and Chopra is so important. Richard?
Yes. Good afternoon, Gary. This is a clip of, now, Richard Dawkins. If you're not familiar with Richard Dawkins, he is, one could say, the most celebrated leader of the New Atheism movement. An Oxford scholar, evolutionary biologist, happens to be a Shakespearean scholar as well. But he's the one who, for all the different programs and articles that we're writing about Wikipedia, a lot of this begins with Richard Dawkins. He was the one who called forth asking for skeptic militants to more or less take control of social media sites and large-scale information bases on the Internet to be able to promote this doctrine of skepticism. Skepticism, I think, is best to be understood as being a scientific materialism that conflates personal assumptions and opinions with scientific fact and knowledge. And so although that the skeptics will argue that their arguments and their reasoning is based on reason and logic, it's very much irrational. These are articles of faith that have been confounded and presented as scientific fact. So experience has no accord with reason, and then reason has to accord with the belief in scientific materialism. So this is the position that Dawkins is coming at Deepak Chopra with, and basically it was a stealth thing. Richard Dawkins will, with a cameraman, will kind of seek out people that have spiritual beliefs or beliefs in or followers of alternative medicine, and he will try to trap them up against a wall and force these interviews. And this is what the case was when Deepak Chopra visited the UK.
Okay, and let's see this short clip of Deepak responding.
As I go through my experience and my experience of patients.
The clip is reloaded.
And my readings, I look at what really could be explained with our current understanding of cosmology or biology or evolution or mind-body connections or the role that consciousness plays in evoking biological responses. Really, the major difference between, say, what I say and the reductionist say is that the mechanisms cannot explain origins of disease, you know, and to have a purely mechanistic approach of here's an infection, use the antibiotic, here's a cancer, use the chemotherapy. This mechanistic approach has led to a lot of disasters. In this morning's newspaper, I read that 10,000 people die in the UK every year as a result of adverse reactions to drugs. And it's also true that 80% of the drugs that we use are of optional or marginal benefit, that 36% of patients in hospitals suffer from iatrogenic disease, that disease patients have because they went to see a doctor. So I think we have to really understand that the mechanistic approach, whilst it's very good in certain situations, is not really the total answer, because mechanisms of disease are not origins of disease. Origins of disease has to do with how we think, how we behave, how we interact, how what goes on in our daily lives, the innumerable factors that make for living: eating, breathing, digestion, metabolism, elimination, sensory experience, thoughts, feelings, emotions, desires, instincts, drives, memories, all of which are part of the human biological organism.
I'm sure we'd agree.
Good for you. Deepak Chopra, you made some important and spontaneous extemporaneous statements. You were right on. So there is a highly contentious debate now. Those of us who believe in the deeper meaning of life, energies, are trying to show the power of the mind. And the mind is not necessarily the brain. And yet the reductionist, the cult of skepticism, would have us believe that there is no such thing as spirit, or there is no such thing as intuition. And my experience in working with a lot of people shows otherwise. We're doing a lot of articles, and we're challenging the skeptics. No one's ever challenged the skeptics in any meaningful way. We are. We've planned 50 articles coming up. Our first one was defending Deepak, and we have more. And you'll be hearing at least one or two every week. We're going to finish our program today. Let me mention, by the way, the health support of diabetes, a group of diabetes, arthritis, insomnia, and fatigue. That's one group. Depression, loneliness, sense of isolation, apathy, loss of meaning in life. That's a separate group. They're going to one after the other this Sunday. You must confirm by tomorrow, or I'm going to give your seat up to other people. A lot of people call wanting to do something, and then for whatever reason, they never show up. We're limited in the space, and I have to have a certain number to make it a legitimate study. So if you're not coming and you call, please call Travis and say, I'm sorry, I can't make it. We have a waiting list. 646-926-5459. Also, I'm looking for a personal assistant. I'll be interviewing people later this week. You can either send a resume to prn at gmail dot is it dot com dot dot org where put it, what is it here a prn studio excuse me prn studio at gmail.com. That's prn studio at gmail.com. We're going to go out today showing you someone who I think Dawkins wouldn't be able to understand. In fact, no skeptic would be able to understand what happened this past April at a health retreat. It's always exciting when you hear from people who have made major changes in their lives and, as a result, are no longer suffering from the fear, anxiety, pain, and disability that various diseases bring upon them. We now have Marcia and Luann Panessi, and we're doing a day before pre-record, meaning this is not being shown live, though you're watching it. This was recorded the day before, because they weren't available during our regular noon to one show. Marcia, the other day, you came up to me on the street as I was entering the Symphony Space Theater for our documentary and lecture, and you had something to say to me. Would you now say the same thing to this audience, but in more detail, giving us background, so we can really appreciate of the results that you shared?
Yes, I'd be happy to, Gary. Several months ago, I went to have an MRI, and I was told by my neurologist that I had an inoperable tumor. When you hear the word inoperable, right there, one's heart sinks. And he said, but let me see you in 6 months. Let's have another MRI, see where this is going, and we'll work it out from there. So when I told my family what happened, my youngest son, Gregory, who is one of your faithful listeners, as is my whole family, actually, he said, Mom, I heard that Gary Null is having a retreat in Texas. I think you should go. And I was like, oh, my gosh, it's kind of expensive. And he said, but your health is priceless, so let's, you know, get it together so you can get there. So I went to your retreat in Texas, and I must tell you that you create like a small piece of paradise on earth. It was so, so very beautiful. And but the thing that was more profound is when I asked my doctor, well, what can I do in the 6 months that we're waiting to see what happens? He said, all you can do is pray. And I took that very seriously because I feel people underestimate the power of the mind in healing one's body and the power of prayer and visualization. And I love the atmosphere that you created for that week with your lectures, with the gorgeous, delicious vegan meals that we had all week. All of the people there were very congenial. The water exercises with John Q every day, the nice brisk walks every day. It was mind-blowing and mind-changing. And I'm telling you, Gary, I'm not joking. Ever since I've come back from the retreat, I think about the things that you advise regarding eating, et cetera, every single day. So I really feel it transformed my life. So anyway, 6 months went by. I took another MRI. My neurologist looked at the results. He said, wow. He said, the tumor is completely gone. And I can't tell you what a relief that was to hear that. And that's why actually I went to Symphony Space, because I was hoping I would see you in person to give you a big, big hug and thank you for the role and the part that you took, I feel, in my healing and my wellness.
Thank you. Luann, would you give people perspective, as you have a background in oncological nursing? You were nurse administrator at Long Island Jewish Hospital for 18 years. You've been in nursing almost 45 years, or over 40 years. And what does it mean to have the type of cancer, brain cancer, that is inoperable, and its outcome? Because what we didn't hear is he said there's nothing that can be done. And explain what that means in the real language of the hospital when a doctor says to a patient, you have something that's not operable. All we can do is, and then fill in the blank, and what the general outcome of almost always whenever they do experimental procedures or chemotherapy, radiation, what that means. So give us that second part, because just so people understand, she had an inoperable tumor of the brain. She came to the retreat. I gave her what I give people, and she followed it strictly, and now she has no tumor. And I want people to know that in the world that we live in, that is not uncommon. In your Orthodox world that you came from, that's almost never occurs. And that's why we are always having physicians call you and say, you know, I'm a board-certified oncologist. We've had them down. And cardiologist, neurologist, internal medicine. They hear about these things. They can't believe it. So they come down to see for themselves. And they do. That doesn't mean they understand what they've seen. But at least they see it's real, because they're there for the week or 2 weeks with people to see the actual transformations. So fill in the blanks to get perspective to this woman's testimony.
Well, in the 18 years that I worked in neurology and oncology, we know that the model, the medical model that our quote-unquote experts are working within, first of all, it's a pharmaceutical model. We cut you, we burn you, or we poison you, and that's how we attack cancer. So when someone has an inoperable brain tumor, in their perspective, The only thing we can do is look at it from a physiological standpoint or a structural standpoint. So if a tumor is in a place that's vulnerable in the brain, and what area of the brain isn't vulnerable, really? Basically, if it's not operable, we can't cut it, and we know that a lot of chemotherapy does not pass the blood-brain barrier, and the ones that do are extremely toxic, they'll pretty much just throw up their hands because that's all they have. That's all they've been indoctrinated to use. They don't look at the environmental components. They don't look at detoxification. They don't look at the emotional components. All they can tell you is what they've learned, and that is if we can't operate, get your affairs in order, your life is ending, and move on. And also, you know, understand that the medical model is a business. It's a corporation, and it's all about the bottom line. How are we making money for the hospital? How are we making money for the physician? That's how, and of course, how are we making money for the FDA? It's all about the money. So when they see that they can't really do anything with someone, they say it's inoperable, get your affairs in order, and we wish you well, or we invite you to come to hospice. Well, thankfully, not everybody thinks like that. And especially Marcia, who came to the retreat, and she saw her dis-ease through a new set of eyes. It's the people that develop that self-discipline and that determination and that belief that they can transcend whatever was created. Those are the people that do very well. And this is not the first time I've had someone have an inoperable brain tumor be completely reversed. And they just scratch their heads and say, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. And they walk away because they can't grasp this in the frame that they have their work in. Does that make sense?
Yes. What was this, a glioblastoma or astrocytoma? Marcia?
I'm sorry?
Was this a glioblastoma or astrocytoma?
No, actually, it was a schwannoma.
Okay. Very serious, very deadly cancer. Now, aside from your own transformation, what did you notice in some of the other guests?
Well, I felt each guest, we were all very supportive of each other. And one thing that I loved was that you had the finest chefs, I must say, give them a hand, that each meal was like a work of art. And I don't think that we realize, just being in a stress-free environment for a week, how healing that is. Like sometimes I would just go and sit under a tree, and I was sure to avoid those red fire ants that everybody told me about, but I never ran into them. But each guest was very supportive of the others, and I did hear other testimonials of other people who had been to previous retreats with you and how wonderfully they felt about their health and well-being, and just taking deep breaths and the exercise and sound sleep and having your smoothies all day. It was just, it's mind transforming, I must say. And I'm a born and raised New Yorker. I was one of the stars of Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, which has become a big cult film. So I've been around. I danced in Jesus Christ Superstar. So, but it was funny because it was like my whole life was just like a blur when I heard, you know, wow, you have a brain tumor. See you in 6 months and see where we go from there. And my son also, Gregory, he said, Mom, I'm sure you want to see your three grandchildren grow up. So let's go and go to this workshop with Gary, this retreat, and see what happens.
John,
and I'm so glad I did.
John Q, who teaches everyone water aerobics and that they really enjoy in the saltwater pool and works out with them in the gym and out on the road, power walking in the morning. This past Sunday, when I was back in the park for the first Sunday in months, he said, by the way, he said, you know that woman that was at the screening on last Thursday night? I said, do you know she was a big model during the 70s. She was a hot number. I said, no, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
So, I'm on the cover of the Stylistics albums, a Freddie Hubbard album, and many albums. And as a matter of fact, even my picture is in the museum in D.C., the African-American Museum, because I'm on the cover of a...
So that's just one person who came to our showing. I hadn't spoken with her. I don't ask people what's wrong with them. I'm just there to help them have a positive experience. And you'll hear from more people. Dawkins would not have a response to how, in a matter of weeks, her terminal condition was completely reversed and she's totally healthy. But then again, that's not uncommon in my world. If you'd like to join us as a part of our fundraiser for WBAI, the last 2 weeks of October, I'm doing the only one for the next 12 months. Let me give you the number for Luann Panessi. She screens people to make sure it's right for you. Luann's number is 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008. And we're almost full. So I hope you all have a nice day. I look forward to coming back tomorrow and sharing more on health and healing. And we'll do Jimmy Dore and some of the other people who are giving their opinion on the Mueller report and the weaponization of the Democratic Party and the betrayal of the liberal and the historical Democratic base that has supported it on tomorrow's show. Have a nice day, everyone.